We are at the foothills of Lukenya, and today we grapple with an issue that has become very topical, the question of sanctions. It is easy to look at sanctions in their contemporary character, but sanctions as a weapon of a political kind and one of an economic kind must be given historical context. One will remember that in the early days when African countries were finding themselves in the midst of what was described as political contestation, the Western world particularly kept a blind eye to some of the worst activities of individuals in African politics. If one is permitted, one will remember in the early 1960s of individuals such as Moise Tshombe, who is recorded to have run away from the Democratic Republic of Congo with 890 bags of gold coins and found himself in Europe. And he lived happily thereafter and, of course, later died in Algeria. And he was not sanctioned. Katanga was not sanctioned. One will remember the kleptocratic regime of Mobutu Sese Seko, who was then pro-West. And nobody remembers a day when Mobutu Sese Seko was sanctioned. One will remember Jean Bedel Bokassa of the Central African Republic, who we know was one of the worst dictators and who embezzled funds, and he was never sanctioned. One will remember many individuals and many countries, because in those days, being a good political boy from a Western perspective meant that you are doing the bidding of the West. Of course, when that changed in the 1989-1990, things took a totally different perspective, and the deployment, selective deployment of sanctions started to acquire another character. But even before we go there, many African kleptocrats, whom we know and whom we can name, kept their money in Europe. Switzerland became famous, or is it infamous, for numbered accounts. It became the home of ill-gotten wealth, or money that was looted from African countries, the Cayman Islands, and many of these. And we know that during that period, these individuals were using their office for purposes of acquiring public wealth. But move to the current situation where sanctions has now become a tool. And Europe and America uses sanctions very selectively when they want to achieve a particular political objective. And one can give a number of examples. Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe was a darling of the West. Such a darling because he did not interfere with the land that was occupied by the white farmers. And in the first 10 years, I remember Robert Mugabe being given an award as one of the leaders, progressive leaders in the continent of Africa. When Robert Mugabe took the decision that the dividends of independence demanded that land must be redistributed, the Western world imposed sanctions on Robert Mugabe and his comrades in arms. And the argument at that time was that the Mugabe regime was perpetrating human rights abuses. Neither here nor there, debatable. The real issue was that the freedom was fought for the purpose of redistributing land. And why was this then not the focus at that time? And the question was, for what purpose are you using sanctions? Because when you sanction an entire country and cripple its economy, the net effect is that you affect everybody. As the saying goes, you use a hammer to break an egg. And that is what sanctions do. The net effect is that the egg splatters and affects everybody else, because the leaders themselves have a way of keeping themselves happy, and they keep themselves happy and rich and merry. And somehow there is also no shortage of sanctioned bastards who are capable of circumnavigating the sanctions. But the impact on the economies is devastating. And this is something that has been used. We know, for example, in the Zimbabwean case, that Western Europe, the European countries, and the Americans have succeeded in sanctioning Zimbabwe, with the consequence that they cannot participate in the international economic arena. And we have seen the devastating impact. And the Zimbabwe example is one that we ought to keep on focusing on, because we have seen the impact on the Zimbabwean currency. We have seen how one of the strongest currencies in Africa, the Zimbabwean dollar, went down into zillions until very recently. Now they have decided to peg their currency on gold, and it's called the ZiG. But even then, the public confidence has been so eroded that you still find the United States dollars as the currency that is in use in that economy, which indeed legitimizes the question: what are sanctions about? Why does the West use tools which are devastating to the population? We have seen in the recent past, on the question of LGBTQ, for example, and people have different views about LGBTQ. Different societies have different ways of dealing with it. And my view, and the view of others, is that cultural domination should not be imposed upon African countries. Let the countries do what they want, but don't use it as a means of impacting on the economies of other countries. We've seen the Ugandans being told that if you do not have legislation that supports our perspective as Europe and America on LGBTQ, then we are going to sanction you. And indeed, Uganda has been removed from the African growth opportunity by the United States of America. We see the Ghanaians are also being dealt with in a similar way. What one is saying is that there is no one size fits all in all these things, and every country should be given the opportunity of doing what is culturally acceptable, and not to use sanctions as a tool which is designed to achieve short-term and long-term political interests. Another use that sanction is now being deployed to achieve is to impose leadership on African. We saw this in the early days in Angola, for example, when the administration of Agostinho Neto was considered to be communist. And then there was a very active support for Jonas Malheiro Savimbi, who was being supported by the Western world and the apartheid regime in South Africa for purposes of eliminating and removing the NATO administration and imposing an administration by UNITA. So that sanctions have become a tool which is used selectively and creatively by Western countries to undermine African political leadership. In the recent past, we have seen when there were revolutions in the Sahelian region, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, in Mali, in Conakry, ECOWAS, at the behest of the European Union, and initially at the behest of the United States of America, which very quickly withdrew, imposed sanctions on Niger. And the whole idea in Niger specifically was to bring back the administration of a head of state whom we know was acting at the behest of France. So sanctions have also been used to create an environment where there is local discontent. Because when you sanction a country, a number of things happen. Number one, essential commodities become expensive. Number two, discontent is created. Number three, the commodities become scarce, because you are telling the world you should not trade with this particular country. And the idea is that once internal discontent has been generated, then it will lead to a revolution, and that revolution will propel into power people and individuals who will do the bidding of the countries that are involved in sanctions. It is never lost on me that when sanctions are being deployed and elections are taking place, these observers, particularly from the Western world in the European Union, then come and either give a clean bill of health to the election, or they say that the election has not been conducted in a proper manner, and then they use that to justify the extension of the sanctions. And another very debilitating impact of sanctions in the world is that a country that is sanctioned is excluded from the international market. And when you are excluded from the international market, it means that your goods and commodities cannot be traded. We have seen that, for example, in Sierra Leone, when they came up with this idea of blood diamonds. And when you talk about blood diamonds in Sierra Leone, or you talk about blood diamonds in Central African Republic, or blood diamonds in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you are telling the world, don't buy these commodity, and therefore you undermine the economies of these countries in all sectors. And we have seen that whenever there are sanctions, agriculture suffers. Whenever there are sanctions, health suffers. Whenever there are sanctions, everything suffers. I'll give the example of Sudan, which is now on the brink of a civil war. For a long time, under the administration of Omar al-Bashir, the Sudanese were under very heavy sanctions from the United States of America and, by extension, Europe. And the net effect is that the Sudanese economy was laboring in a manner that could not satisfy the population. And some of the things that later degenerated in this conflict can then be seen to have emanated from the sanctioned regime. It is also instructive to note that whenever there are sanctions, then it leads to armed conflict. It is never lost on me that in countries which are under sanctions, you will always find that there are insurgents who are then given the wherewithal by the sanctioning countries to undermine the countries that are under sanction. It is in this regard that we must understand the ongoing sanctions in Central African Republic, the ongoing sanctions in Northern Burkina Faso, the ongoing sanctions in Niger, the ongoing sanctions in Guinea-Conakry, and of course the ongoing sanctions to a certain extent in Guinea-Bissau and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So that in a nutshell, one sees that sanctions are not indeed designed to create a world which is devoid of criminals, or to create a world where there is freedom, but sanctions have become a political tool which is used to whip countries into line economically and particularly politically, so that they move like sheep in the direction which is recommended and approved by the sanctioning powers, largely to the detriment of the population. The time is now for the world and multilateral institution to ask whether unilateral sanctions, which do not have a badge of approval or do not have the imprimatur of the United Nations, is to be justified at all. In the African context, I think that the time has come for the African Union to ignore some of these sanctions, particularly if they are not approved by the African Union and if they are not in the best interests of the entire continent. Sanctions are a whip which is used selectively and to the detriment of African countries and indeed different countries in the world. We have a saying in many African languages that he or she who wants to insult you does not choose an insult. We have been talking about sanctions, which are used selectively. Let us say goodbye to come back again to continue with the conversation around and about the continent of Africa.